Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins, the Anchorage Daily Planet, and Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News. We're broadcasting on Friday, and early this morning we heard Don Young got himself into a whole lot of trouble by words he spoke in a Ketchikan radio interview, or a word he spoke. He referred to people who worked on his family farm as wetbacks. This created a storm that went viral, as the whole country now knows about, and it's being broadcast on CNN and other places. What happened, Paul Jenkins?
I don't know. I think he's lost his mind. This is unforgivable. It's an unforgivable slur nowadays. I suppose 40, 50 years ago, they were saying all kinds of things we don't say anymore. And you would think a guy that's now under investigation in another front is going to have to face re-election. Would have better sense in this, and the number of times that he has put his foot in his mouth, of all people, you would think he would be more circumspect. John Boehner has demanded an apology. His Hispanic colleagues in the House are not pleased with him. He's going to have to go on again another apology tour and trying to rectify this. And the worst part, of course, is it comes as the Republican Party still wincing from last year's election defeat, starting to reach out to minorities, Hispanics, whatnot, trying to build the party as the all-inclusive big tent party, and then we have this. So I think he's done a lot of damage, not only to himself, but to his party.
Steve, I think I misspoke a little bit. You heard about this last night.
That's correct.
I heard about it this morning, and then it went viral this morning, but last night being Thursday night.
Yeah, last night we got off the air on the news hour, and it was there was a news release that was out from the Young office, Don Young's office, and it was basically clarifying. It certainly didn't apologize for the remark. It was just a clarification. This is something that Don Young.
I think
Young,
the quote, he says, "I used a word that was commonly used during my days growing up on a farm in Central California.
Yeah.
I know that this term is not used in the same way today, and I meant no disrespect."
Yeah, and so it was this clarification, yes. And it was, that's what it stemmed from, and that's what he said on the radio. And there's never a good time to use a remark like this, but it does indeed come at a horrible time politically for the Republican Party. This is the latest in a long line of gaffes that some were made.
Well, this is one of the things that's important here is the context, right? Especially Don's personal history of abuse of the language and.
That's correct. Yeah, he's made a number of, maybe not to this degree, but he's made a number of missteps over the years. And I think some people just say, this is Don Young. People in Alaska maybe say that. This time, though, it is a very derogatory term.
Yeah, I'd felt that for years we've treated Don Young like the weather. Mm-hmm. There's nothing you can do about the weather. There's nothing we can do about Don Young. That, mm-hmm. People understand that he has said things that are offensive or upset people, but that's like the passing storm. Let's just move on here.
Yeah.
And he's been able to do that, but in this context where his colleagues are reacting, it's not an Anchorage Daily News editorial or somebody commenting on Channel 2.
That's right.
This is his peers.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, the point I was trying to make. You had John Boehner, who's the House Speaker, his boss essentially, saying that this is unacceptable, this is wrong, we want an apology. There's also a national Hispanic group that has called for his resignation. And this is at a time when the Republican Party is trying to reach out. They did an exhaustive research paper on what went wrong in the last election, and part of it is that they've got to be a more inclusive party. And now they have one of their senior members saying,
This sort of exemplifies what some people accuse the Republican Party of being, of old, insensitive white guys.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it follows a couple of other statements that were made about women and sexual assault during the presidential campaign that set back Mitt Romney's campaign a few days while he had to demand apologies and seek clarifications and things like that that derails the campaign. This has derailed a movement for the Republican Party. But more importantly, this is a slur against a group of people that who take great offense at this too.
Paul, this is the quote from John Boehner, the Speaker of the House today. Congressman Young's remarks were offensive beneath the dignity of the office he holds. I don't care why he said it. There's no excuse, and it warrants an immediate apology. Speaker Boehner wasn't fooling around when he issued these words.
Well, I think he's dead right. This is not something that's just going to affect Don Young. Mm-hmm. It's not going to affect Alaska by itself. It's right. going to affect the Republican Party. This costs the Republicans this kind of thing, this loose lips sink ships kind of thing, costs the Republican Party the presidential election in large part. They cost them advancements in the Senate, but in large part. They can't have their membership running loose out there mm-hmm. doing this kind of thing. And it just makes, if nothing else, it makes them sound dumb. It's bad enough to be looked at, I think, as a party of old white guys. But old dumb white guys, I mean, that's just adding insult to injury.
We're hoping for the wise men who can guide our country, not the
we're
dumb
guys. Looking for that. That's exactly
Paul,
right.
Is there any way at the present time to read how this might play out for Congressman Young?
I think he's, if you recall some few
he is resilient.
Ago, he is resilient. He has done things to himself in the past, and he bounces back. When I mentioned earlier that he's going to have to go on another apology tour, yeah. At one point, running against John Devens, he was 5 points down because he was missing votes, he wasn't there, he didn't care about the, and then with just a few weeks left out, he went on an apology tour. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I did this, forgive me, you know, blah, blah, blah. Boom, he wins by 5 or 6, 8 points, whatever it was. He has managed to pull himself out of the mud more than once. This time, there's the cumulative effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's a cumulative effect of one investigation after another, right. this kind of thing after another. I think it's going to catch up with him, not careful.
It used to be in the past, during the Clinton administration, for instance, when they had the big face-off over the federal budget and Congress had to work overtime, so to speak. They had to stay in Washington. It was in an election year and Congress was there in session. And he had a hard time coming back to the state and campaigning. I believe his mother passed away that same mm-hmm. year as well, so he was distracted with that loss. And one of the things that was able to save his candidacy, he was behind in the polls, is he came back with a lot of loot in each hand, yeah. With a lot of pork barrel projects, and here's your road, and here's your community center, here's your school addition, what have you, and that was able to win the day. He doesn't have those resources now because money is really tight in Washington. I don't know if he can come back and smooth things over by saying, look, I brought a whole lot of money with me. So I think the one saving grace that he does have is that he just did get reelected here in November. He's got a long time to go before the next election, so sometimes people forgive and forget. He has a lot of time to maybe explain himself and apologize and, like you said, go on a tour, but we'll see.
We're gonna have to break here and go back to some other topics. Once again, I'm Michael Carey, and I'm here with Steve McDonald and Paul Jenkins. Paul, the Anchorage Assembly rewrites labor laws by a 6-5 vote. Mayor Dan Sullivan prevails in his labor dispute with the unions. What happened in the Assembly chambers? And what did the mayor get?
There was a concerted effort to amend 37 out of existence, change it, stall it, slow it down. The engineers union, I believe, is the first union up for renegotiation of its contract, and that's here in the next week or so. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a concerted effort to try to drag this thing out and get these things underway and slow down this juggernaut. What did he get? He got no strikes in the future by any city employees. He did got rid of arbitration, mandatory arbitration. He got managed competition, which will put city workers in competition. Gave the city more control over rules, work rules, over scheduling, and that sort of thing. And it limits pay raises. It does several things that, in his view, brings the city back to parity at the bargaining table with the unions. From the union's view, it's stripped them of their right to collective bargain and put them at a real disadvantage. So, and they're not pleased about it at all. This is not over, I don't think, no.
Steve, this was a 6-5 vote, as I mentioned. Was this only possible because Cheryl Fresca, who the mayor appointed, replaced Harriet Drummond, who went off to the legislature?
Well, yeah, in large part. And that's probably one thing that the mayor really couldn't control in this instance, because, you know, I don't think he campaigned for Harriet or anything like that. But when she decided to run for the House and won, that was a person who really wasn't known for siding with the mayor on issues. And he was able to appoint Cheryl Frasca, who was his budget director at City Hall, and a longtime Republican, and she worked for Governor Murkowski when he was in office, I think Mayor George Wirsch when he was mayor of Anchorage. So she's been aligned with the Republican Party for many years.
And has a lot of experience in public finance. A
lot of experience. She really knows her stuff. So she was appointed to that seat out there, and that gave a friendly ally to the mayor, and that gave the 6-5 margin, basically. Mayor did a lot of other things, though. He really played the angles on this. He announced this Ordinance 37 back in February, just within a half hour of the deadline of signing up for the municipal elections. So there are some people, like Ernie Hall, he had no announced competition. Ernie Hall supported this. He's got Nick Moe now running a write-in campaign. Yeah. That's a long shot. Nick Moe's a good guy.
Maybe we ought to turn to that.
Okay.
The consequences of the vote will be felt in the municipal election on the 2nd. In several races, we have candidates supported by the mayor and union candidates.
Right. You got Dick Traney and Andy Clary facing off.
And this could
Midtown.
Really affect the turnout, don't you think?
Oh, I think it can. The potential is really there. Probably the most organized at getting out the vote would be unions. And I don't know how many union members who work for the city or just union members live out in the Midtown area. But if they get the people out to vote or give money or put in yard signs or run out of time now, it's Tuesday's the election. But certainly if they get them out to vote.
I understand their phone banking, too.
And phone banking as well. Yeah, it can make a big difference. Andy Clary now, he has connections with the Anchorage Baptist Temple. His dad is part of the administration at the temple. They're very well known. Pastor Prevo is very well known for being organized and getting the flock out to vote and giving money and things like that. So that was Clary's advantage, I think, in that race. And now it's been at least matched, in my perspective anyways, by the union turnout for training.
Yeah, I had was shown some of the campaign contribution reports and mm-hmm. They certainly were competitive, both in the Traney race and Clary race, and in the Steele and Frasca race. There was plenty of money for both candidates to make their case. And I believe there were independent expenditures as well, right, interest groups.
Oh, I believe so. Yes, absolutely. And I talked to Tim Steele the other day, and I asked him what's been the reaction. And he says he's seen it door to door. People, he says, have been angry about the fact that this guy passed. So whether that translates into support for him at the polls, I don't know. But he certainly has gotten more union support, I think. And as it's built up, I mean, this wasn't an overnight thing. As this momentum in this debate built up, he said he saw more support from union
Thank
people.
You, Steve. Paul, Assembly Chair Ernie Hall says he will clarify the standards for hearing public testimony. Why?
Well, they had four public hearings, 5 hours apiece. So nearly 300 people testified. There were still people waiting to testify, I guess, at the last one when they shut it off. The ACLU says its reading of the municipal charter indicates that everybody who wants to speak should be given the chance to speak. I think the city disagrees with that. Nonetheless, Mr. Hall has decided he'll look into this and within 30 days offer up an ordinance clarifying the city's rules on testimony. The ACLU says it'll withhold legal action for 30 days while this is pending. So how this turns out is anybody's guess, but I think it'll just be one of the things they suggested was, well, you come to the very first one and put your name down, and no matter how long it takes, you get to testify. But at some point, when the testimony becomes incredibly repetitive, mm-hmm. and we're saying the same things over and over again, and it becomes obvious it's a stalling tactic, at that time, I don't know what you do. I suppose that's what they're going to sort out in these new rules.
And as you suggest, it's not crystal clear what the right thing to do is and what's right. Fair here.
Right, exactly. It's a real gray area.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to Steve. The Parnell oil tax bill, or versions of it, continue to get attention mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives after passing the Senate on an 11-9 vote. What chances do House leaders have of changing this bill, which some of them want to change and the oil companies are suggesting needs further change?
Yeah, the oil companies, as soon as the Senate passed that bill, oil companies say, well, it's a good start. Good start. Needs to go a little further. The House, of course, this is a friendly place for this bill. Last year it passed the House by a fairly wide margin, and it stalled in the Senate. So now it's passed the Senate by, as you said, 11-9 vote, and now it's gone over to the House. Democrats there, outnumbered 3-1,
yeah.
They're going to do their best to try to amend this. I just don't know how far they're going to get. I don't think they're going to get very far with this, and I do think it's a foregone conclusion that this bill will pass the House.
I mean, some version of the bill.
Some version of the bill, yes. Whether, you know, but I don't think there'll be too many major changes. I don't see that happening. There's still a lot of questions about what the state of Alaska gets out of all of this. We're going to give you a tax break, but there aren't any promises. Perhaps there'll be some sort of benchmark put into the legislation that says, you know, you got to produce this much more oil, and then you get some sort of a break or whatever. But I don't see too many big changes coming up in the House.
Paul, if there are changes, do the Senate and the House have the time to get through a conference committee and make and adjust those changes and accept those changes?
Well, I think the big fear in the House, the supporters of the measure, the big fear is that Republicans in the House will try to make it tougher than it is and increase the tax break, and that may cause a problem that has to go back to the Senate. I think they can. I think they've got the time to get it through. I think they're willing, I think everybody's willing to go to a special session if they have to, but I think that they do have the time, especially if they don't tamper with the bill too much.
Yeah, you know, Steve, I talked to one senator who said if they were smart, he was on the other side, the nine side that lost, if the 11 people, the House was smart, what it would do is just accept the Senate bill.
Right. Yeah.
And I sort of laughed and I said, I think they have a hard time doing that.
Yeah.
They want to get involved in this and put their mark on it. But if they change it very much, you could see, for example, when they got Senate got Click Bishop's vote,
right?
You know, they might have real problems to bring it back to a conference committee with serious changes.
Especially, you know, they've seen a lot of fallout from this thing passing too. So there may be some folks out there who get cold feet in the Senate. Yeah, it passed with the closest of margins. You know, the governor even gave a speech. I think it was before the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and said, you know, if the House, if you're going to fiddle with this, use the same buttons and knobs that are already in the Senate version. Just fiddle with those. Don't add new buttons and knobs. And that was kind of a reference to what Paul just talked about. Don't make it more complicated than it is. You know, keep it as simple as it is right now. So,
Paul, there are bills in both houses having dealing with natural gas, but do they have prospects for passage? First, Speaker Schnault has a bill of a gas line to the North Slope to South Central going anywhere soon.
I don't know. I really don't have a feel for it. It's there's certainly opposition to it. There's people who are afraid that such a gas line would cost the state an inordinate amount of money and have to be subsidized long term. I don't know that it's going anywhere very soon. I know there's a real drive to get it done, but I don't have a sense that it's going to happen this year.
And my understanding of this is it really wouldn't get a gas line started building soon. It would get a process going.
That's right.
I do sort of wonder how much stomach the legislators have for two or three big projects after dealing with oil taxes, but
I don't know, and that's going to take up some of their time. And I you look at this, and you have to ask questions. Valdez wants the line to go there. They want a big line. Mm-hmm. They're advertising against any other line. There's coalitions gathering up to fight this line. I think this thing has politically got a long way to go, and I'm not sure if it gets where it's going that it's going to be the best thing for Alaska. I think that'll have to get hashed out along the way.
And there's advertising, at least I've seen print advertising,
condemning
the legislation in a kind of sarcastic way that I'm not sure readers understand.
Well, I think people at this point are totally confused about what this line does, yeah. what a large diameter gas line would do.
Well, the House Bill 4, the one that's being put forth, is a small diameter line that would come into South Central and would feed Alaskans natural gas, which the state desperately needs.
Everybody agrees that's a good idea.
Everybody agrees. And ask the people in Fairbanks, because energy costs are through the roof and they need some help. And same thing's going to be happening here in South Central and Anchorage and the whole rail belt, because in about a year from now, the demand for natural gas out of Cook Inlet is going to exceed the supply coming out of the inlet, and we're going to see our prices spike as well. So everybody agrees there's got to be some kind of a line that comes down from the North Slope. Now, if you talk to the utilities will tell you, we don't have a big enough market here to really buy up all the gas that can be supplied and make a project really feasible. So what the other side is saying is we need a large diameter gas line to come down into South Central. It needs to have these little break-off points where you can feed everybody through the rail belt. And then you got to sell the excess gas to places like Asia. And that's what's going to pay for the line. And that's what's going to help also feed state coffers. So that's kind of the two differences right there.
Paul, you have something quick.
Well, and that's what the Parnell was trying to get the larger companies to do, get a large line together.
That's like a Jeep.
And take it to a saltwater port somewhere.
Right.
And then ship it overseas, but siphon off enough for here. The small diameter line will have to be subsidized by the state. That's a huge political
That's really what's got them hung up. Steve, Fairbanks is looking for legislation that would permit or allow trucking natural gas or more natural gas from the North Slope to Fairbanks to provide fuel that, as you indicated, they desperately need at a reasonable price. Most of the money that would go involved in this would be loans, but is this going to pass? Do we have enough time to sort this out? There does seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, I think this does pass, because even if they said today, okay, we're going to pass one of these two pipeline bills, it's going to take a few years to get that thing built. And these folks up there are dying on the vine right now. I mean, they're paying exorbitant amounts of money each month for energy, and they need some help up there in Fairbanks and the interior as well. So they've got to find some kind of at least a short-term answer to this. And again, this is something that also is going to be considered for South Central. It's a possibility that we'll see natural gas trucked down into the Anchorage area too, if this shortage becomes a major, major problem, a bigger problem than it's expected to be.
And in Fairbanks, there's some important matters to consider. They have to build a whole lot of the infrastructure.
They do.
People who wanted to get gas. Some people will have to change furnaces, others won't.
Yeah.
And then be the whole question of price.
That's true. It's going to be expensive no matter what
you do.
We're
looking here about importing LNG.
From possibly British Columbia, possibly Australia.
Right.
We're an energy producing state, importing energy. That's a great thing.
There's a political black eye for somebody.
Paul, Senate Majority Leader John Coghill says he doesn't expect a resolution containing a constitutional amendment that would allow the state to aid parochial schools and private schools to pass this year. Timing of this remark.
I think there's a real fear that it's not going to go. There's a lot of opposition. I'm not sure that there's enough support for this thing to go this time. Next year, maybe there's a concerted effort out there to get this through. It's various groups. I just don't think it's ready yet. I don't think it may not be ready next year, but it probably will have a better chance next year than now.
Hmm. On the other hand, Steve, this is a measure that has received intense support, all kinds of lobbying, letter writing campaigns.
Mm-hmm. People
are voting their intensity who believe in this proposal.
Senator Mike Dunleavy, who was just elected, he won his race last August, actually, beating Linda Menard. He's one of the prime backers of this, and this is a media campaign has sprung up on both sides of this issue, and that's kind of something that's evolved in Alaska over the last few years. When there's a key issue, we used to see it just kind of debated between lobbyists and lawmakers and all down in Juneau and taking place
turn
there.
Turn on your television and watch Pebble Mine ads for a mine that hasn't been built yet.
And now that you've got the gas lines all of a sudden generating a lot of a media campaign, and you've got this particular issue now that it's going to destroy public schools. Oh, we need to have choice. Our reading grades aren't really up where they should be, so we need to have better school choices. So it's a campaign every time an issue comes before the legislature, it seems like. But it seems like it's kind of I, I just don't think they're going to have enough time to get to this issue and vote on it.
And that's pretty much what it's telling.
I think they're hoping to get it into finance.
It's got to percolate.
Before we leave, I'm going to throw you a change-up, something that we didn't get to discuss when we put together the budget for the show. Paul, Lisa Murkowski says her views on gay rights are evolving. What does that mean?
I think everybody's views on gay rights are evolving. Gay marriage, I think across the land, the American people, latest polls I've seen go 54-56% for gay marriage. I don't oppose gay marriage. There are several Democrats, from Bill Clinton to his wife to Republicans now.
But Paul, don't you think when politicians use the word evolving, what they're saying is, I don't want to answer your question today?
What they're saying is, here comes the wave and I'm not going to fight it. That's pretty much what they're saying.
I mean, I guess we should acknowledge that people do take these matters seriously and do think about them.
Sure they do. And I think reasonable people have their opinions do evolve. I mean, you can be totally against something one day and 5 years later, go, well, that was dumb. Why was I against that?
And we recently saw that with a Republican governor, I believe.
Senator Portman of Ohio, a member of his family.
Any
thoughts before we depart on evolving?
It was just kind of funny. There was somebody on Facebook the other day who posted something about it. It's really a cool time to be gay because there's so much support out there for the gay population, you know, it really is different.
And people my age are saying, tell me about it, youngster.
Yeah.
So we'll have to tell you about this. We're out of time, but please join us next week as we'll have our post-election show, and we'll all be a lot smarter next week on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublicmedia.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.